the swear count in the peg mount is far higher than his paramount.
Nah. The swear count in the peg mount is far higher than his paramount.
The swear count in the peg mount isn't anywhere near low enough to be satisfactory?
Swear count.
Swear count.
Swear count.
Swear count.
Oi, Ken. Any chance of some refreshment in here?
There you go. Get your laughing gear round that.
Oh, golly. The swear can in the peg man...
What's that?
...is far higher than his paramount. Oh, gosh. The swear can in the peg man is far higher than his paramount.
He's cracked it. He's only cracked it.
Yeah. Wait till she tackles all the inebriation and factual inaccuracies.
What?
The Peggy Mount Calamity Hour stumbles drunkenly through the profanity that other podcasts steer clear of.
This week on the Peggy Mount Podcast.
We at Science meet Spider-Man.
It is, isn't it? It's very, very... You know what? Fair play, mate. It's 2 years before Weird Science. I have to give it that.
Uh-huh.
But it's very much Weird Science. It's Weird Science if the person running the computer doesn't like girls.
No, that's how Grindr was created. Are you all right? Hello and welcome to a Peggy Mount Calamity Hour electronic exclusive episode located out of the ordinary, out of order and out of spite on a completely different platform. I'm Dr. Velvet.
I'm Blackout.
And we're sat at a computer terminal to enter a password, watch the lampshade shake and then talk about some 1980s telly.
Yes, hello you, and thanks for cruising by for our casual cultural critique of vintage television, where Britain's best-loved battle axe is never far from our minds, because here, all roads lead to the mountain. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're tuning in for the very first time, we're delighted to have you here for this exclusive show we've made especially for the Acast. If you like the cut of our jib, everything else we've done can be found at peggymountpod.com, where info and links for the programme we're discussing is in the show notes. You can find us on the socials, suggest programmes you'd like us to cover, or just get in touch to say hello. Before we create an artificial intelligence construct with the personality of C-3PO, the hair of Luke Skywalker, and the power consumption of an iPhone 4, Dr. Velvet, I've got to ask, what are you drinking?
I always used to love, in the summertime, I used to like to drink ice pops.
Right.
And yeah, I used to like the juice from the ice pop. I used to let it melt. I used to take it out of the fridge.
Yep, I used to
let it melt. Yeah. So I had six grape flavour in the fridge.
Oh, God.
So I've taken those out and I've cut the packets and I've put them all into one glass with a little bit of Absolute vodka. That's me.
Outstanding work.
Yep. The sun may not be shining outside today, but there's sunshine in my glass, let me tell you.
There certainly is.
What about your good self?
I'm going to be enjoying a tin of Stout About It. It's Aldi's price-friendly 5.2% vanilla stout.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because vanilla stout was the work-in-progress name for tonight's simulated action hero.
Automan was an action-adventure series produced by Glenn A. Larson for 20th Century Fox Television. It centred around police officer Walter Niebuhr, played by Desi Arnaz Jr., who was also an ace computer programmer who creates a crime-fighting AI that's able to leave its computer and walk around with a hologram for a disguise, played by Chuck Wagner, which wears a handy blue glowing bodysuit. Walter calls his creation Automan, as all the cool names were taken when Glenn Larson checked, and gives him the real-world pseudonym of Otto J. Mann, which you have to admit is fair enough. Walter and Automan share their secret with the girl one, Roxanne, played by Heather McNair, and Automan's digital assistant, Cursor, while getting into all manner of sitcom shenanigans with Walter's superiors, Lieutenant Curtis and Captain Boyd. We've watched the very first episode, titled Automan, because why wouldn't you, Glenn, which aired in the UK on Saturday the 12th of May, 1984, at 5:20 on BBC One. Dr. Velvet, were you booted up for this?
Oh, was I ever. Saturday tea times...
This was the stuff. This was the stuff. This was dazzling to me.
I don't remember if I actually watched this or not. I definitely didn't watch sort of multiple episodes. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you that I certainly wasn't a fan the same way I was like with Street Hawk or the A-Team or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it seems kind of oddly familiar, so I've clearly watched it at some point. That Saturday tea time slot, it seems to suggest that it's going to be a bit more playful and not be taken too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, there's not going to be any grit in this. There's nothing to sort of get your teeth into.
Not
of course,
all.
I say that as if the A-Team and Knight Rider weren't shown at exactly the same time on the other side, fitting exactly the same bill, but still.
Right,
you know.
Right, yeah. And I think the choice was to be made, to be honest. But A-Team, well, I was watching Automan when others were watching the A-Team. There you go. I didn't have a foot in both camps. And I didn't have a VCR in 84, so I didn't have a choice. So I was for Automan. Yeah,
okay.
There was just that computerized edge.
This is the thing. This was a show that recognized computers as a central plot device.
Yeah,
rather than just having some cars that go fast. So it feels like it's got a lot more potential in 1984. By the time the decade's really kicking into gear, then
kind of future proof in themselves in a way. And if anybody's
kind of.
If anybody's unclear about the computer, the what now, we get a beautiful expositional montage as a prologue to the episode.
This is what I'm thinking, mind. We open with this kind of like narrated catch-up explaining how Walter has made Automan. And I'm like, hang the fuck on. Have we missed the pilot here?
Right.
We get the standard minute of opening titles, as normal. And then 2 minutes of Automan narrating catch-up, flashback, voiceover exposition. This is the first bastard episode. What happened to Show Don't Tell?
Yep.
He just turns up and goes, I'm hellish me, deal with it.
And if anybody, again, doesn't know what a hologram is, the concept is explained to us by Chuck Wagner.
That's a very fancy word for a three-dimensional picture that, when perfected, can be made to look real, sound real. As a matter of fact, given enough power, it can even be made to feel real.
You know, don't talk down to his mind. Brilliant theme music, mind. Brilliant theme music. It is a cracking title sequence, I think. It gets you going with a Wilhelm scream in there, a female Wilhelm scream.
I think you'll find that's called the Wilhelmina scream.
Fair enough. And this prepares us for Weird Science meets Spider-Man.
It is, isn't it? It's very, very much. You know what? Fair play, mate. It's 2 years before Weird Science. I have to give it that.
Uh-huh.
But it's very much Weird Science. It's Weird Science if the person running the computer doesn't like girls.
No, that's how Grindr was created. yeah.
That's all this is, a prequel for Grindr.
Right, right. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
We certainly will.
Now, I refuse to believe that the computing power existed in 1984 to
Correct.
Simulate hair as fucking glorious as Chuck Wagner's bouffant helmet is in this.
They were still having problems with that on Monsters, Inc.
That's my disbelief is suspended right off the bat. Mind you, he acts like a fucking computer, so I'll give him it.
He does. Somebody who doesn't act like a computer is, of course, Walter Nabisha, our protagonist, who has a beautiful line in sports jackets and Fair Isle tank tops. Woo!
I am loving the Fair Isle tank tops. He's like, I want to see a double act, him and Ronnie Corbett just playing golf.
It'd be great, wouldn't
just
it?
Riffing off each other. Just that. Fantastic.
Yeah, it'd be superb. So we get into the episode. The evil people do what they do.
Yeah, they're kidnapping people on a plane just by walking up to them at the airport and just going, are you that man who's getting on that plane? And they go, yes, we are. Well, you need to come in our plane. Do I? Oh, okay. And then they get on the plane and they go, now you're kidnapped, but you're on a plane.
Yeah.
We see this happening at the very start, and it happens once more. It's explained neither time.
Neither.
We'll get on to that. That's fine.
We will. They could have been really crafty and said, "Ha, this is a surprise. We're actually taking you to an Avengers convention."
Yes. Yes.
Honor Blackman won't be there, but Steed's there anyway. We're in the police station next. I'm struggling with this scene. Okay. First of all, you're somebody who has effectively created a superhero.
Yeah.
You're going to keep this under wraps. Why are you at Graft? Why are you at work and making the superhero manifest or attempting to? Why would you just throw the light on it? Why would you just open that to the world? Because that's essentially what you're doing. The risk is massive here.
But he's making the superhero to do police work.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's getting any actual work done, because he's spending so much time programming this bit, like, on the sly.
Yeah.
I assume he's just, like, alt-tabbing between that and a spreadsheet whenever, like, the boss comes in. That's fine.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No one's gonna
find out your secret, because the password is just unbreakable.
Well, exactly this. And again, he's got one of those computers that has very handy 72-point text filling up the screen.
So, that's right.
Yeah. Can be seen by someone in the next room when he's typing his password in as plain text. Lovely.
Yes. No one's ever. And then he clicks enter, and then we get an earthquake, essentially.
Yeah. Is this... This isn't the very first time he switched it on, though, is it? Because
no.
We've already got the opening exposition
that
shows clips from it happening for the first time.
Yeah. No, it can't be.
I'm not sure what Glenn A. Larson was playing at here. I think they've probably shot a pilot, haven't aired it. There's been a discussion where they're like, well, you've got to show like all the I want a glass there with some water in that just explodes.
Yep.
I want a printer that catches fire.
Yep.
And you're like, why would the printer catch fire, Glenn?
Because
it would.
Right.
I love that Glenn Larson has written this without knowing a single fucking thing about computers or how they work or what they can do.
Right.
He's used this child logic of, I don't understand this, which means I don't have to explain how any of it will happen.
Yeah.
It's fucking excruciating. No wonder Roxanne doesn't believe Nabisha when he's talking about Automan. He sounds like he's fucking making it up on the fly.
She looks at him like he's an idiot. And she might. I mean, he adopts a different angle to try and convince her. He brings out a book and he explains that Automan, he's programmed Automan to be an amalgamation.
Oh, the book. The book.
The book. An amalgamation of...
The book.
Paul Newman.
Uh-huh.
Christopher Reeve.
Yep.
Burt Reynolds.
Yep.
Lee Majors. Tom Selleck.
Yep.
And I think the last one is star of many a Western film, Jack Palance. I think it's him.
I thought it was Richard Burton.
Ah, it could be Richard Burton. There you go. Right, could well be. I wasn't sure about the last one, but there you go.
Yeah, it's like... Basically, Walter has built this imaginary best friend by... On a computer that can't fucking display proper images, remember? It's
right.
Just got like a sort of this vector drawing of like an outline of a person. The kind of thing we'd see on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but that's what he's working on.
Yeah.
He'd just do this by programming in what he imagines to be the personality traits of those actors. So you're trying to synthesize a middle-aged actor, are you, Walter? That'll be helpful.
Yeah, right. Right.
Burt Reynolds. Why? In case the police are ever involved in a bust where they have to chase someone using a Dodge tradesman van and a charismatic moustache. Because that seems quite specific, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
There is definitely a theme going through Walter's A4 publicity photo display wallet here.
Oh.
They're of a type, aren't they? I think that having a central character that's so clearly out in 1984 is a marvellous thing. I don't think that anyone else at 20th Century Fox had picked up on this, but,
no.
You know, fair play.
No. Absolutely slid right under the grid there. Yeah. And Roxanne is very, very calm about all of this that's going on.
She's just edging towards the door.
Well, yeah.
She's like, he's fucking crackers. Apparently he's a genius. He's spending all his time down here making an imaginary friend. Right, okay, I'm getting out of here. And then, yeah, the printer catches fire.
That's right, a beautiful printer. And Walter then cracks on about the fundamental workings of computers. Have we slipped into some kind of ITV schools programme cloaked in superhero conventions to assist kids learning? It's
good
very...
Lord.
It's yeah. Again, we're on a patronising bent here. You people out there in ordinary land, you don't know about computers, but us here in the show business, we do, and we're going to tell you about it.
Because with a computer, right, I can program a magic buff pixie that can magic cars out of thin air. That's what they can do, and that's going to happen within 5 years. So watch this and be ahead of the curve.
Absolutely.
Okay, Walter.
Yeah.
Mm. While I understand that Automan is an artificial intelligence that grows and learns.
Mm.
In order to have all of these keen detection and problem-solving skills off the bat, Walter needs to have programmed them in to begin with.
That's right.
Which tells me that Walter can already do all of this, except for fabricating imaginary jet planes. Why isn't Walter out actually solving crime?
Yeah.
He's employed by the police.
Yeah.
It's never particularly clear. They just kind of stuff him away in a back room and go, you do something with computers, Walter. And they're just like, have you solved the crime yet? I've made an imaginary friend. With what? A computer? I mean, Christ. There's the bit where the printer catches fire, right? Captain Boyd comes in, and the girl one is like, oh, it was my fault. I knocked a glass of water over onto this, and then pauses. And then Walter goes, keyboard. And Captain Boyd's like, is that what it is? I thought it was a typewriter. Never mind. Are all of the police fucking idiots?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good God.
It's odd. Anyway, let's get out of the police station. And we cut to we cut to Patrick McNee for a short little while. And I was overjoyed to see him because I'm a big fan of Patrick McNee.
Yep.
And he in later years was assigned to the bad guy roles because that old adage, you know, in an American drama, a British guy does it well.
Yeah.
This reminded me of the fact that Patrick McNee was a celebrated nudist.
I didn't know this, but I've now got a picture in my mind that I can't get rid of.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I'd read a book on the Avengers and New Avengers, and between takes, he would piss off and play tennis in the nude.
Always just turning up 9 o'clock in the morning on set, just with the bowler hat and the umbrella.
That's right.
Patrick, no, no.
Yep. And the umbrella wasn't in his hands. And action, Emma Peel. So, good old
He
Patrick.
Does always lend a touch of class to anything.
He does.
I do love him to bits. But, you know, he's not trying here, is he?
No.
At all.
No, he just does not care. No, turned up just doing it on the way home. He's got to play golf at 2 o'clock. Yeah, absolutely.
And he's got his Swiss secret agent guards with their lovely bright orange fucking trousers. Very professional.
Very.
When I have a secret base, my guys are going to have those.
Let's go to the apartment of Walter Nebuscha. Is he a squatter? Is he supposed to be there? Because God Almighty!
He's a hacker. He's a geek.
He's a hacker and a geek. He's,
you know,
does it mean to say you have to live like Steptoe Senior? The man is in a hovel, man.
He's putting all of his effort into that presentation booklet of charismatic male actors.
Right? No, this is... I will just point out at this point, we do get a little pizzazz of Cursor.
Oh.
Here we go.
Cursor's a prick, isn't he?
I'll tell you what Cursor is. He's a sex pest, but I'll get into that later.
Considering the character as a visual effect with precisely zero dialogue, why do I hate him?
Same as me. He's the Scrappy-Doo, he's the Snarf, he's the Godzuki of this show.
He is.
Absolutely.
The problem is that bit in the opening titles where it just says, and starring Cursor as himself, and you think, oh, that's going to be fucking hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Really is, and it is. So, let's move away, because it's actually, to be fair, Walter's apartment stinks of shit. So let's move away.
Has Automan started dimming out at this point? Have they explained why he's not completely invincible? Why he's got like the one fatal flaw?
Yeah,
which will come up like approximately every 8 minutes.
That's right.
Walter Nebuscha has created from absolute scratch. Remember, a relentless crime fighter who has to have a sit down when Barbara at number 14 puts the kettle on.
That's right.
If there's anything else going on, he can only come out at night because that's when everyone's asleep and all their electric is not. Well, you could save a bit of power by not having that fucking suit light up.
Right, there's a flaw in that. there's a flaw in that whole thing, because at night, right? What about during the dark nights, during the winter months, when it's dark from 3 o'clock? He can do frigging because people will have the lights on in the house, causing more of a power surge than there is during the day.
He doesn't come out as soon as it's dark. Automan only comes out at 1 a.m.
Oh, it's 1 a.m., is it? Right. Oh, well, that's...
In fact, I believe that was like... that was what it said on page one of the pilot scripts.
Right.
Written in black marker, Automan only comes out at 1 a.m. And we're like, that's where we are, is it, Glenn? Yes!
Nah.
But does all of this mean... Does all of this mean that no one at the Northern Electric is noticing where the power's gone?
This is the question.
Captain Boyd comes in at 9 o'clock in the morning to a memo saying, perhaps you'd like to explain why every house in a 200-mile radius had to reset the clocks on their videos this morning while all the cables going into the police precinct have fucking melted.
Yep.
It can recharge itself like in an instant from a PowerPoint just by standing close to it.
That's right.
But apparently that's not enough power to run him for more than fucking 7 minutes.
It's bullshit, this, isn't it?
I don't think Glenn Larson had a computer at this point.
No, he didn't. He'd seen one in the case catalogue.
Right.
But there's no.
And his mum was like, I'm not buying you that. You'll use it for games. You won't do work on it.
Yeah.
So at this point, we're about 45 minutes in, and we're precisely no closer to finding out why these kidnappings have happened. Is this case unfolding in real time?
Yeah, well, oh, I wonder. I wonder. We go for dinner in a beautiful little burger bar joint.
Oh, yeah, we get the Superman 2 moment.
What a twee little scene this is, isn't it? Eh?
Yes.
Isn't it? Dead canny. God almighty.
Yeah, we get a bunch of bikers that go over and sort of pick a little bit of a fight.
Yeah.
Classic TV/movie bikers, one of which played by the legendary Sid Haig in an early role. That's nice. And of course, yeah, Auto Man, just his secrets, top secret altering, just fucking shows up in the middle of a diner.
Yep.
Glowing like an absolute clip.
Yep.
Just like, hello, I'm here, I'm magic. I'm going to throw a cup at you using the computer internet electricity. And I'm like, it's fucking Ray Bradbury writing this episode.
Exactly.
This is incredible. And then the computer car turns into a plane because it can, and that's how they won there. Boy, I'm glad I invented computers. I am great, me. Thanks for your help with the script, Ray. That's a lot of use.
Right?
Good Lord.
Oh. And now, here's a thing, actually. I didn't realise what an effect this could have, this moment. So, yeah, Automan's got a cracking car. Lamborghini Countach,
mm-hmm.
Tits to the max with neon lights.
I was going to say, with lights on it, you don't really see the car, you just see the lights.
Yeah, I mean, Tron, a go-go. But,
yes.
But, so Cursor creates the car. Now, the car has a certain noise, and it sounds like this. Now, around when this was first shown on the television, I was too cool for school for 2 minutes of my life. Because I could imitate the noise of the car. And I did it once on the school bus. Everyone thought I was mint. It was, you know, one of those little moments of glory that you get at school.
Was it mint or mental?
Mint, I think, at the time.
Right.
But then when episode 2 came out, oh, I can do the noise of the car. Yeah, we know, we heard it last week. And I was back down to be, you know, that was, yeah. But I don't even know if I can do it now. Can I? That sort of thing, you know. Obviously, it's better when your voice hadn't broken.
So at that point, when he's like, oh, and yeah, I can just make a car out of nothing and you can sit in it and we can both get transported actually in an actual car because that's what a computer can do. By that point, yeah, fuck it, I'm just going with it. I'm like, yeah, all right, go on, Glenn. Convince me.
Yeah.
It will never be as cool as Patrick McNee leaning out of a cherry red Jeep, rocking the fuck out of a sky blue cravat and navy woolen blazer combination
totally
set.
Totally agree. I wish they'd give him a bowler hat with that. They should have. I wonder if he came up with that because, you know, he designed the suits that he wore as John Steed in The Avengers.
Right.
And I wonder if he's had a hand in this again. I'm only coming on if I can do this. Yes, if I wear this. That's not how Patrick and me talked, but there you go. Yeah, so. But anyway, right, so the point of the car journey is we got taken to an office block so Walter can go in and have a secret look at the secret files and that. How's he going to get in? How's he going to get into that building? Well,
that's what I was sitting wondering.
Yeah, I think we're back to some Grindr references because Otto Man says to him, enter my dimension. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And for want of a better phrase, Walter climbs inside Otto Man.
At this point, it's not even Freud. It's just like fucking Jerry Springer levels.
Right. And they're able to walk through walls of the whack to get to where they want to be in this building.
Yes, they absolutely are. They absolutely fucking are.
Yeah.
Because again, as everyone knows, a hologram is basically projected light. And light can go through walls. That's how walls work. Yes, that's right, Glenn.
Done it again, Glenn. Yeah. One of our first wide shots of Auto Man. Now, I had to investigate this because I looked and I thought, look at the fucking Cuban heels on him. I genuinely thought I need to check this out. So I did. I've done a little bit of research. This is the absolute truth.
Chuck Wagner, who plays Automan, was 6'5". They wanted to make him even more unearthly, unworldly. Those Cuban heels are 4 inch.
Get in.
The man is 6'9", stood there. That's insanity.
To be fair, it's basically 7 foot by the time you take into account that hair.
Well, yes, it is. It is, because that is a 3-inch bouffant, without a doubt. Yeah.
If the car crashes, he'll be fine.
Good Lord, what a presence. And in that suit, that's nuts. Love it. Love it. We do see another example of Cursor bothering women in this.
Uh-huh. Yep, yep.
Don't like him. Don't like him. By the way, while we're on the subject of this, it just sprang to mind. There's a film by the name of Hugh Legram, H-E-W Legram, from 2017. And at the director's request, Chuck Wagner reprised his role as Automan in this film for a brief appearance. There you are, something to look out for.
I can't envision me watching that, but it's nice to know that it exists.
Well, I am going to have a look at it. I'm just curious, but yeah,
right.
Let's just see. Just to make sure they get the stack on the heels right. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just for when he wanders into the back of shots.
Yeah.
Like Frankenstein's monster clattering on these heels.
Yeah.
In a light of bodysuit going, "Hi, I'm Auto Man."
Yes, exactly.
Speaking of terrible voices, I love how none of the cast in this show can pronounce the name Dubois with reference to Tanya.
Can't they? I didn't.
They all just keep calling her Dubars, Dubois. It's Dubois, mate. It's fucking no one, even Patrick McNeagus, is wrong. I'm like, it's got to be spelt phonetically in the script. And they're like, is this how you do it, Glenn? Yeah, yes, it's Dubars. Yes, that's how you pronounce that name.
I wonder if Glenn Larson then had a hand in with an episode of The Golden Girls. I refer to a specific episode where actress Bea Arthur, her character, Dorothy Zbornak, was talking about the film Bull Durham, as in County Durham, in this country. And she pronounces it Durham, which I thought was beautiful. Bull Durham. I like that. I like it.
Could well be.
I think Glenn's responsible for that.
Do you think Glenn Larson wrote The Golden Girls, or do you think Ray Bradbury did? Because either way, Estelle Getty's an android.
Yeah, yes. Right.
But yeah.
We've done what we need to do inside the office building, and suddenly Walter meets a lady in Chinatown with a beautiful pink plastic Mac. We're definitely in 1984. We're definitely in 1984 here. That was reassuring.
Yeah.
That was reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
Before the episode progresses, and suddenly it turns into a buddy movie with Walter and the bad guy, which, to be fair, that sounds like a typical 80s sitcom from the United States.
Yes, yes, yes. That was quite a character turn for him, because he does go from being like a proper arsehole. Mm. There's two of them at the start there, quite willing to just shoot police officers. And then, you know, fuck consequences, that'll be fine. Bang, take them on the plane. We'll just chuck them out over the middle of the sea.
Yeah.
Then just turns into this like sort of bumbling goon, and all of a sudden, he's basically just one of the good guys.
Yeah. Mm. But we're off to Switzerland. That's where we're going.
We are.
Yeah.
We are indeed.
The car turns into a plane. Aforementioned Lamborghini Countach turns into a plane. And once again...
Because it can.
And once again, Automan displays that he oozes smugness. Mm-hmm. Oozes smug. I'm not being funny, but you would want to kick his mouth right off, wouldn't you?
I'd be more inclined, even if it was me that had programmed him, that had actually invented this thing, I'd be more inclined to be sitting in this plane, looking around and going, why aren't you curing cancer?
You're right.
You're clearly far, far more than I'd ever intended you to be. Uh-huh. Why are you arsing about chasing after Steed in the Swiss Alps?
Right.
Who seems to be kidnapping people for reasons that haven't been explained yet, and even when they are, they're not.
Yeah, yes. yes. Incidentally, while we're in this car, I know you won't watch this again. Maybe you can type in a screenshot based on the following description. At certain angles in the car, Desi Arnaz Jr. looks like Rodney Bewes.
I wish they'd made a British version of this with Rodney Bewes.
Can you imagine?
Who would you have as Auto Man? You're not allowed to say James Bolam.
No, no.
Although that would work really well.
Yeah. let's think. Who would I have? Gloria Honeyford.
Okay. My vote was going to be Jeffrey Holland, but yeah, fine.
Oh, Jeffrey Holland. That's a thought. Because he's quite tall. Yeah.
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 But still chasing after Patrick McNeil.
Yeah, of course.
He gets to stay in it.
This is why we don't work in casting. So, anyway, we get to Switzerland. there are other scientists who are already there, and we get to meet those. They meet in the beautiful Swiss Lodge. What a stunning pair of tomato red slacks that man is sporting. Not only with confidence, but with pride.
You would, though, wouldn't you?
I mean, normally I'm a gog. All I have to say on this is, wowee. Incredible. And that, mind you, that lodge looks mint. I would go there for a holiday.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why are they there? I get some bit about, like, people who are really important to the companies, they sort of say they threaten to leave the company. So then the company puts some kind of price in their head. So then they're kidnapped and taken to the Swiss Lodge so that they can't leave the company. Then they have to carry on working. And I'm like, who's this helping? What is this? What is fucking happening
the
here?
The nature of the work that they're doing, I must admit, has escaped me. I'm sure it is explained, but it has escaped me in my note-taking.
I swear to God, Glenn Larson's just like, if we get the guy from the Avengers in, it'll seem like an Avengers plot. Then it will make sense and it'll be fine.
Yeah, it could well be this. I quote, when they are kept here at the Swiss Lodge, they are treated to the finest luxuries available. What they missed out on that bit of the dialogue is, including the most crackers clothes that we can find, and we'll make you wear them. Because everybody that's there, the wardrobe is nuts. But, yeah, which is why I need to find out where that is, because I need a holiday there.
So, yeah, so we get to the hour mark.
Yeah.
And then Automan starts questioning the nature of reality and perception. He actually goes, but what is real? And what is an illusion? It's like, well, you wait until now, after you've taken me on an imaginary plane, you, a person just made of lights, I'm definitely, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We haven't time for this because Patrick McNee's going apeshit.
So they, what they do is they confront him. And then they go, well, he's going to get away on the plane with Tanya, the other girl one. And they're like, well, we've got to stop that. What do we do? I know, we make a false plane.
Yes.
They make an Automan, generates a duplicate plane exactly like Patrick McNee's plane.
Yes.
And then they get to it. And had they taken Tanya on the plane, this wouldn't have worked. I think they even address this in the script. They're just like, nah, you leave her behind, it'll be fine. Mm. They get on the plane. Then they realise about 10 minutes into the air, when it's dark and they're out over the sea, that, like, there's no one flying the plane. And Patrick McNee suddenly has this, like, massive moment of realisation.
His reaction to that is a cracking bit of melodramatic acting.
Well, it is, because you're like, how the fuck can his character know what the fuck's going on if the audience don't?
Well, yeah.
Because it's not explained. What happens to them then? Does the plane just, like, blink out of existence? Do they just plummet to their deaths?
This is it.
Does it transform into, like, a giant toilet and smash them down into the rocks?
Right.
What happens?
Yeah.
We don't see. It just sort of fades to them laughing on the tarmac.
Yeah.
I'll refer you back to Patrick McNee from earlier in the episode.
What is this ridiculous drivel?
And, you know, so say all of us, Patrick, really.
Right.
My conclusion is that within the narrative of this show, Automan doesn't exist and none of this happened. It's just Walter Nabisha having a breakdown.
I think you possibly could be right.
We are watching what is happening inside his head.
Yeah. Bless his heart. Why is he sat in his hovel? In a cagoule. And a Fairisle tank top. Yeah.
Going through his album.
Yeah. Speaking of breakdowns, can you break down your score and show us what it is, utilising pegs, hologrammatic pegs, that you'll clip onto a virtual reality line?
Well, like a lot of the computer games I used to play back in those days, Automan seemed fun and futuristic at the time. Mm. And like a lot of the computer games I used to play back in those days, hindsight reveals Automan to be clunky, low-resolution, first-draft bullshit. 2 out of 9.
Very harsh, very harsh. I still have a little bit of an emotional attachment to Automan because it was all right. It was in an era where all of these new shows were popping up. And I remember my eyes going, oh, when I first saw it. And I thought, okay, I've been waiting for this for a while. It was the first of its kind in such a long time that we got a sniff of anything superhero-y. And I was a big fan of your Wonder Woman with Linda Carter, Spider-Man with Nicholas Hammond, The Incredible Hulk with Bill Bigsby, Lou Ferrigno. We didn't get much of it on telly. So I still feel that bit of excitement when I kind of see. But
in retrospect, yeah, you look at it, it just doesn't hold up. It's no, in any way, shape, or form. I'll give it 3 for some emotional attachment.
Okay. But the thing that everyone wants to know, they've literally been hanging around all this time just to find out, they don't care about the rest of it.
Right.
How many steps would it take you to yodel up the mountain?
Well, as it happens, I can do it in 3. So, treading the digital boards here as Ian Automan is Chuck Wagner, who'd go on to appear in a 1986 episode of Dynasty. Next to Kate O'Mara, who played the Rani in Doctor Who, opposite Sylvester McCoy, who of course helmed the TARDIS for The Greatest Show in the Galaxy, who could only star Peggy Mount.
My kipper was cold, my tea was tepid.
Lovely stuff. The most convincing thing we've covered in this episode.
Well, indeed. And your good self, sir, how many steps will it take you?
I can only do it in 2. This inaugural episode of Auto Man features none other than Sir Patrick McNee, who donned his inimitable bowler in the Castle Dayath episode of The Avengers alongside Gordon Jackson, who also rocked up in the Dr. Fruitcake episode of Lollipop with Peggy Mount.
Well, that's no news to us, is it, Miss Kitchener?
Amazing. All right, that's that. While I check the electricity bill for any anomalies caused by multiple hologram-generated power surges, Blackout's got your socials.
Yes, thanks once again for being with us. If you want to get in touch, you can email peggymanpod@gmail.com or we are @peggymanpod on Twitter and on Facebook. A quick reminder, this episode is an exclusive, especially for Acast. If you like more of this sort of stuff, then check out peggymanpod.com for details of the regular feed and access to all of our past and future episodes.
It's as simple as that. It really is. We'll see you elsewhere. Until then, keep programming, keep drinking, and keep mounting.
The Peggy Mount Calamity Hour is a free podcast from iCall Media, which holds production copyright. Opinions and recollections expressed are not to be taken as fact. The title and credit music is by Dr. Velvet. Audio segments from television programs are presented for review and informational purposes only under fair use, and no ownership of these is claimed or implied by this show. For more information, visit peggymountpod.com.